Have you ever been up around 10-11,000 feet on a clear day, felt fantastic, sharp as a tack, and then landed and realized you couldn't remember the last 20 minutes of the flight? If that's ever happened to you, you weren't tired. You were a little bit hypoxic. And the scary part is you had no idea. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern here on Radio Hangar. Today we're going to talk about one of the most quietly important regulations in the whole book. Federal Aviation Regulation 91211. The Supplemental Oxygen Rule. It's three little numbers, 12,500, 14,000, 15,000, and most pilots can sort of quote them, but almost nobody has actually read the whole thing and thought about what it's really protecting them from. Let's walk through this together. Before we do, quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial? They've got you covered. It's a great way to mark the milestones that matter, and honestly, that first solo coin makes a heck of a gift for a student who just got the back of their shirt cut off. AviationSoul.com, okay? Oxygen. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The reason this rule exists has almost nothing to do with running out of air. Up at 14,000 feet, there's plenty of air around you. You can breathe just fine, your chest goes up and down, you feel normal. The problem is pressure. Down at sea level, the atmosphere is pressing down on you at about 14.5 pounds per square inch, and that pressure is what crams oxygen molecules across the little membranes in your lungs and into your blood. As you climb, the air gets thinner, the pressure drops, and even though the percentage of oxygen in the air stays the same, roughly 21% the whole way up, there just isn't enough pressure to push it into your bloodstream at the same rate. So your blood oxygen level starts sliding, slowly, gently, without a single warning symptom you'd actually notice on your own. That's hypoxia. And the specific kind we're talking about, the altitude kind, is called hypoxic hypoxia. The insidious thing about it is that one of the very first things it takes from you is your judgment. The exact tool you'd need to recognize that something is wrong, you get a little euphoric, a little overconfident. Your fingernails and lips might go a bit blue, but you're not looking at them. Your vision narrows, especially at night. Your reaction time stretches out like taffy, and you feel great the whole time. That's why we don't leave this one to how you feel. We put numbers on it, and that's 91211. Let me give you the rule the way it's actually written, and then let's translate it into English. The regulation splits into two parts. The required crew, meaning the pilots, and everybody else on board, the passengers. Here's the crew side. First number, above 12,500 feet means sea level. Up to and including 14,000 feet, the required flight crew must use supplemental oxygen for any portion of the flight at those altitudes that lasts more than 30 minutes. Read that again slowly because there's a trap in it. Between 12,500 and 14,000, you get a 30-minute grace period. The clock only matters for time spent above 12,500. So you can cruise at 13.5 for 25 minutes with no oxygen, and you're perfectly legal. Cross into minute 31, and now the crew is required to be on oxygen. Second number, above 14,000 feet means sea level. The required flight crew must use supplemental oxygen during the entire time at those altitudes. No grace period, no 30-minute cushion. The moment you climb through 14,000, the mask or the cannula goes on, and it stays on. Third number, and this is the one for the people in the back. Above 15,000 feet mean sea level, each occupant of the aircraft must be provided with supplemental oxygen. Notice the wording there. Provided with? Not required to use? The regulation makes you offer it to every passenger above 15,000. It doesn't make grandma in the back seat actually put it on. That's a legal distinction that matters, and we'll come back to why in a minute. So there's your three numbers. 12,500 with a 30-minute clock. 14,000 crew on oxygen continuously. 15,000 oxygen provided to everyone on board. Let's put it in the airplane now, because a regulation you can't apply is just trivia. Picture a real scenario. You're flying a normally aspirated single, let's say a Cessna out of Colorado, headed west over the mountains. The terrain is high, the minimum safe altitudes are high, and to clear the rocks comfortably, you're planning 13,500 feet. Legal VFR cruising altitude for your direction, good terrain clearance, beautiful day. Here's the decision most pilots don't consciously make. Your route keeps you at 13.5 for about an hour and a half. That is well past 30 minutes above 12,500. So by the letter of 91-11, you, the pilot, are required to be on supplemental oxygen for most of that leg. Did you plan for that? Did you rent or borrow a portable oxygen system before you launched? Because a whole lot of pilots flying in the Mountain West get to the airplane, look at the terrain, pick a legal altitude, and never once connect that altitude to the oxygen requirement. They fly the whole leg technically illegal and, more importantly, a little bit impaired. Now here's the part I really want you to hear. The regulation is the floor, it is not the recommendation. The FAA and the Aeronautical Information Manual both suggest that for your own good, especially at night, you consider using supplemental oxygen anytime you're above about 5,000 feet at night, and by day, the physiological reality is that most people start measurably losing night vision and fine judgment somewhere around 8,000 to 10,000 feet long before the legal number kicks in. I've flown with a little finger pulse oximeter clipped on during a long climb out west. The same $20 gadget they put on your finger at the doctor's office, and watched my blood oxygen saturation drift from 98% down into the high 80s at 11, 12,000 feet. I felt completely fine. The number told the truth my body was hiding from me. That's the takeaway I want you to carry. The rule protects your certificate. The oximeter and good head work protect your brain. Let's talk about the equipment, because 91-11 says use oxygen, but the how matters. There are basically three delivery systems you'll run into in general aviation: the continuous flow system, the diluter demand system, and the pressure demand system. The one most of us actually touch is continuous flow. That's your portable bottle with a regulator, feeding either a simple mask or a nasal cannula. It just trickles oxygen at a set rate. Simple, cheap, reliable. The catch is a cannula. Those little prongs that sit in your nostrils is only approved up to 18,000 feet. Above that, you need a mask, because above 18,000 you start breathing through your mouth without realizing it and the cannula can't keep up. Diluter demand and pressure demand systems are the fancier setups you'll see in turbocharged and pressurized airplanes and up in the flight levels. They only deliver oxygen when you inhale, and they mix it smartly with cabin air, so the bottle lasts longer. You don't need to memorize the engineering. You do need to know that the airplane you're flying determines what you've got, and you should know how to work it before you're at altitude, not while you're getting stupid at 15,000 feet. One more equipment note that saves lives and check rides. Both know how to read the pressure gauge on the bottle and know how to calculate your duration. A small portable bottle at a continuous flow rate can empty faster than you'd think. And running the tank dry at altitude puts you right back into the hypoxia you were trying to avoid, except now you're higher and you've got less time useful consciousness to figure it out. That phrase, time of useful consciousness, is worth a hard 60 seconds. It's the window between when your oxygen supply is cut off and when you can no longer take meaningful action to save yourself. At 12,000 feet, it's a long time. Half an hour or more at 18,000, it's 20 to 30 minutes. At 25,000, it's 3 to 5 minutes. At 35,000, it's about 30 to 60 seconds. The higher you go, the more brutally the clock speeds up. That's the whole reason the regulation gets stricter as the numbers climb. Now, how does the examiner handle this on a check ride? If you're a private or commercial applicant, the airman certification standards expect you to know the aeromedical factors cold, and hypoxia is right at the top of that list. The examiner is looking for you to explain the symptoms, the types, and the corrective action, and to state the 91-11 altitudes correctly without fumbling them. Here's how you nail it. When they ask, don't just recite the numbers, give them the numbers and the meaning. Say, above 12,500 to 14,000, the required crew uses oxygen after 30 minutes. Above 14,000, crew is on oxygen the entire time. Above 15,000, every occupant must be provided oxygen. Then add the thing that shows real understanding. Tell them the first symptom you'd personally watch for, and tell them the corrective action. And the corrective action memorized, this is not subtle. If you suspect hypoxia, you get oxygen flowing immediately, you descend to a lower altitude, and if you're on a supplemental system, you go to 100% oxygen and check the flow and connections. Oxygen first, then down. The good news is that recovery from altitude hypoxia is fast, usually within seconds to a minute of getting oxygen back, which is exactly why catching it early matters so much. Let me hit a couple of the corners of this rule that trip up even experienced pilots. First corner. It's mean sea level, not above ground level. Every one of these numbers is MSL. Out west, the ground itself might be at 7 or 8,000 feet, so 12,500 MSL sneaks up on you fast. You're only a few thousand feet off the deck and you're already in the clock. Second corner, this rule is for unpressurized flight, and it's written around cabin pressure altitude. In a pressurized airplane, what matters is the altitude inside the cabin, not the airplane's altitude through the sky. A pressurized twin might be cruising at 23,000 feet with a cabin altitude of only 8,000 and everybody's comfortable. The regulation is really asking, what altitude is your body actually experiencing? For most of us in unpressurized airplanes, that's just your altimeter reading. Third corner. And this is the passenger one I promised to come back to. Above 15,000 feet, you must provide oxygen to every occupant. If your passenger chooses not to use it, that's on them, legally. But think about what that really means. A hypoxic passenger can't help you, might panic, might get sick, might grab a control. Providing the oxygen satisfies the reg. Actually getting your passengers to use it and briefing them on how before you climb is what makes you a good pilot instead of just a legal one. And here's the honest part. Because I promised you honest. Learning to fly is hard and it's expensive. And oxygen equipment is one more cost on a pile of costs. A portable system, a bottle, the fills, it adds up. I get it. But of all the things you could skimp on, the one that protects the organ you're using to make every single decision in that cockpit is not the place to save money. If you regularly fly high out west over mountains or on long night cross countries, a portable oxygen system and a $10 pulse oximeter are two of the best safety investments you will ever make, full stop. So let's bring it home with the practical takeaways you can use on your very next flight. 1. When you plan a cross country, look at your cruising altitude and ask a question you probably never asked before. How long am I spending above 12,500? If the answer is more than 30 minutes, oxygen isn't optional, it's required, and it goes on the load sheet before you launch. 2. Buy or borrow a pulse oximeter and actually use it on your next high flight. Watch the number. Learn what your own body does. You will be surprised. And that surprise will make you safer forever. 3. Remember that the regulation is the legal floor, not the smart floor. Your judgment starts eroding well below the numbers, especially at night. Consider oxygen earlier than the reg demands, particularly after dark 4. If you ever feel great for no reason at altitude, tingly fingers, warm, a little giddy, treat that as a warning, not a mood. Oxygen on and start down. The material for today came straight from the Federal Aviation Regulations themselves. Part 91, the Aeronautical Information Manual's chapter on aeromedical factors, and the FAA's own Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, which lays out the hypoxia symptoms better than I ever could in 20 minutes. If you want to read the actual rule, it's 91-11 and it's shorter than this segment was. You can find everything we do over at radiohangar.com. Fly high if the mission calls for it. Just don't do it with your brain running on empty. Put the oxygen on, watch the little number on your finger, and keep flying the airplane. I'll see you back in the pattern.